a few days back about why Taylor Swift has risen back to such fame right now, and because I'm like the Swiftie of like my friends, like I'm the Swiftie person, so they come to me for those questions that I'm like, I don't know, but I'm guessing it is the PR brand that has been built for so many years, and she has been able to pull through it, and a lot of the money actually goes into PR and publicity around what she's doing, where she's going, what she's wearing, why she's wearing, and all those like clues we see around like the pictures that she takes, what kind of ring she's wearing, and all those analysis that people do on her looks, like the Easter eggs that she keeps on dropping, and all those things, they are part of a very algorithmically designed mechanics. So by algorithm, I don't only me technology, like that is also being done, I'm sure, because that's how like platforms like Instagram and TikTok work anyway. They have all these things that calculate your views, and then they keep on like showing it up on your feeds. I'm sure people have experienced this before, like if you watch one reel about something, you will be shown similar kinds of reels and similar kind of TikToks over and over again. It is because how these platforms are structured to keep the audience on the platform. So if they know, if they, I mean literally there are mathematical equations that say if they watched, or what is the duration that you were looking at a certain cat video, for example, and if it like hits their criteria of like if it's like more than 30 seconds, they will show a similar kind of video that is related to what you just saw. And if you keep repeating the pattern, so if you keep watching similar kinds of videos for more than 30 seconds, they will keep sending you, by they I mean again algorithms, not people. People are there who design those algorithms, but the problem comes when algorithms are separated from the people who created them and who don't think about the consequences of these algorithms that they just designed. So if you watched a hateful video or something, it is going to show similar kind of stuff because it is designed to do so. Is a commercial and monetary reason behind it, because each click and each swipe and each reel that you watch is making them money, to put it very straightforwardly. I mean, so yeah, it is, that is what I mean by algorithmically, but also algorithmically in the sense that it's very calculated as to what sort of shoes she is wearing that day, or what sort of brand she's carrying on her like launch of her movie as compared to when she attended the match, so where Travis Kelce was playing. So all those things are calculated PRs, and yeah, it's interesting to see how it has played in her favor and all those things. So I still love her, obviously, but I'm just saying that it is not as simple as we think it is. Like, I'm sure Taylor is not running her Instagram account, like the amount of people on there, on her team who handle social media, for example. I'm sure there's a huge team, like 15 people just running her social media, and then 15 people just doing video editing for her, like music videos. I'm sure there's like 7 or 8 people doing all those like Easter eggs things for her. And you know, it's interesting because we never see the actual behind the scenes. And even if you see them, it's through movies that are highly charged to make you feel certain ways. So for example, Miss Americana is meant to show Taylor in a certain light, and Miss Americana the movie really does that. So yeah, I just wanted to put it out there as a communications student that it is interesting for me to think about an artist through that like background. And yeah, coming back to talking about the whaling politics and the gendered dynamics of it, I think one of the other things that I really found interesting in the piece The piece that I'm talking about here is Do Muslim Women Need Saving? I'm sure you can Google it and find it, but I can also put a link in the recording archive of this episode. But the author talks about how whaling is not just about, like, it's not just about oppression. That's how it's considered, at least in the Western sense, that they are whaling because they are oppressed. But whaling, as the author explains, is that there are different forms of whaling. First of all, whaling covering like different parts of the Middle Eastern area has like different connotations associated with, because for example, Pakistan, Afghan will have different kinds of coverings. Indian Muslim people have different kinds of coverings, and it has a very historical, social, and cultural reason behind it. So it is not a good idea that person is whaling. It is necessarily means that they are oppressed. I'm not saying that it's not the case. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it is also. And that again actually comes back to the point that people should be given the agency and power to talk themselves. So oppressed, they should have enough in themselves to voice their concerns, and it should not come from a position of hierarchy and position of power that is not relevant to them. So yeah, whaling has different meanings in different communities. This is what she talks about, and in the context which they are being used, but also whaling itself must not be confused with or stand for lack of agency in most cases. Meaning of whaling in contemporary world, I think she talks about, is that we need to work against the reductive interpretations of whaling as quintessential sign of women's unfreedom. We object state imposition of this form. So like making those simplistic deductive statements that whaling and Muslim women need sync, the author again reiterates that they should be given the power, and they should be in a position of power where they can save themselves and have darkies work in their favor, like not have to go to someone in France to, you know, cry for able to help themselves. And yeah, I think that is the overall theme about the piece. There were some parts that I couldn't really understand because I don't come from that culture, and she also talks about cultural relativism. So we try to understand other person's culture from our lens, but that is, we can never fully do it because we were never in the first place. So I think it also, again, ties back to the feeling that they should be given the voice, and we shouldn't be trying to promote our own values, impose our own values onto them. So I think one of the lines that I really liked, perhaps, was that projects of saving other women depended on and reinforced a sense of superiority by Westerners, a form of arrogance that deserves to be challenged. That's her whole idea, that at least they should be made so capable that they don't need anyone to save them, if that makes sense. I will have another artist talk about, or sing about, actually, something interesting, butterflies. So spring is coming up, you know. So I'm going to play Butterflies by Kixi, and then we will see how it goes. I hope you enjoy it.
Me to say when the butterflies.
Forever.
So that was Jenny Mayhem, and she's also a Canadian artist. I'm trying to play some interesting Canadian female artists today. And the one before her was Kixie, and it was her album All My Friends. And I really like the song The Butterflies because it doesn't just talk about butterflies that we have in the beginning of the relationship, but also in general, it's a really good spring song in my opinion. I just want to sort of close my conversation today by perhaps talking a little bit about intersectionality, what it means, because I think I just sort of turned it because in my head I just know what it means, but it might not be that apparent to people who are hearing it for like the first time. Intersectionality in general was the term that was coined by Kimberly Crenshaw, and it just simply, it's not a simple concept, but it's simply, I'm trying to say it, means studying the overlapping and intersecting social identities and its relational oppression, domination, and description as discrimination. So what it means is that intersectionality means it is an intersection of all these sorts of systems of oppression. So for example, if you are a female, gender is something that intersects with your identity, and that is just to be a system of oppression. So there is a discrimination that is correlated to being a female in a workplace, for example. And if you are a person of a color, that is another plane of oppression. So that has its own cultural, historical baggage that comes with it, all the discrimination, domination, that comes with it. And what happens when you are a person of color and a female? So if you are a female who is a person of color, then it happens to be an intersection of all those oppressions and discriminations, and that is what intersectionality tries to understand, what happens when we are at the multiple intersections of domination, oppression, and discrimination. And that's what I mean when I talk about intersectionality in terms of like gender and race. But there are so many other forms of it, like disability is part of it. Caste is something that is relevant to some contexts. Religion is something that also comes into play when talking about intersections. So like when different forms of and systems of oppression, discrimination, and domination come together, a person is at more risk and is at the intersection of all those oppressions, working on them together. Something that I wanted to address, and I also realized that I unfortunately forgot to do land acknowledgement in the beginning, so I want to do that right now. So CGSF and SFU campus, where I'm talking from today, is located on the unceded ancestral territories of the traditional Coast Salish people, including the Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Kwikitlam nations. And unceded means that this land was never given, but it was stolen. So wanted to acknowledge that. And you were listening to your host Pranjali Mann at Intravenous. And I really hope that I can do more shows in summer, but my summer sort of looks really packed right now, so I cannot commit to anything at this moment. But I really look forward to talking more. I hoped I told you something that was valuable, but I look forward to more. And I look forward to having Robin, my co-host, with me in the room again, and then we might have like more interesting conversations. But now it's time for a song by Taylor Swift, because, you know, I'm obsessed with her. What can I say? So I'm going to play probably the music that you've already heard, because it's sort of trending right now, but I also enjoyed it. So let's get into Fortnite.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. from New York, this is Democracy Now!
Too many of our people are worshiping a false idol once again. They are enraptured by it. They are profaned by it. And that false idol is called Zionism.
Leader in the Streets, award-winning author and activist Naomi Klaus at Grand Army Plaza in Brooklyn. On the